Biden, Senior Vice President of Licensing and Entertainment One, which is entertainment conglomerate, I guess would be the word. Or we have film division, a distribution division, a record company. We produce our own TV shows. We have about 1,700 people in the company. We have offices in two in New York, one in L.A., two in L.A., I should say, one in Toronto, and one in Nashville. And I'm based in Nashville, and I run the sync division and the licensing division.
Right.
And we have four people, basically. Well, three plus a consultant. We just lost one, but we will replace her. And our task is to get out there and place our music in film, TV, video games, commercials, wherever music is used. That's what our goal is, or our mission is. And we've been very, very successful. My background is I started out as an artist. Actually came to Nashville because I signed with a record company that was based in Nashville. And had a little success. I had a couple of things on Billboard and toured with some really good people. But I realized that my best thing was getting a deal for myself, not keeping it. Because
right.
I think I was dropped by eventually every label that existed. I mean, eventually I ran out of labels to pitch myself to. So I figured I better reconvene and figure out what else I was going to do. And at the time, I was really producing myself in the studio because I guess I was kind of incorrigible as an artist. I guess I thought I knew more than the producers did, and so not too many producers wanted to produce me. So you get that reputation, and that's not a great reputation to have. So I thought I better change my ways, and so I really started focusing on producing. And did that, and writing, and had some success with that, and had some things in the charts. And really, eventually, I realized that being an artist was not going to be my thing. And so I really didn't know exactly what I was going to do. But somehow, I got into international licensing of product. And really, the way that came about was somebody told me about this thing called MeetEm, which was an international buyer's market, and it was in France, held in Cannes. And I had just finished producing a female country artist. So I went to France with the product, and it was really an amazing experience because I'd never seen anything like it before. It was just people from every country in the world, and virtually nobody was there from Nashville. I mean, I had it to myself, really. And the thing I learned right away was if you just call what you had music as opposed to country, you had a good chance of placing something. And so I did. I was real successful placing. Jerry Kelly was her name. She was a really good artist. I placed her in France and the UK and all over the world, actually. And the crazy part was it turned around and came back and was distributed by Sony here in Nashville because of who I had placed it with. They were the distributed label of Sony. So they had already rejected her one time themselves directly, so they weren't thrilled when they got her back, but it actually worked out pretty well. And I did that. I stayed independent, and then other people started coming to me asking me to place their material overseas because they knew I was about the only one doing it. And I really didn't tell too many people how I hit on this. And so there were just really a few of us who were even knew there was a world outside of Nashville. And from there, I did that up until about 2000, early 2000s. And then I joined the company at that point was called Compendia.
Right.
And got into licensing and international. And I also did A&R and signed artists and kept producing. And that same company until about 2011. We were bought by Koch Entertainment, which at that point had changed its name to Entertainment One.
Right.
And then Sync became real important as opposed to international licensing, which we still do a good amount of. That's actually making a big comeback lately.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason. And so started getting into that, and I was real lucky. We had Entertainment One has a great catalog, so I started placing things in film and TV, and found out it was really a contact business. Everything was really based on who you know, and that's always been what the music business is anyway. You're always dealing with supply exceeding the demand, so you really better have good relationships as well as good music. And that brings us to today, and been very fortunate in placing a good amount of things in major films, major commercials, major TV shows. So that's where we are today.
And you know, Mick, I think you touched upon a point here that in everything to the run-up of bringing us to today is super important and something that I'd like to focus on, which is the need to create good relationships within the industry and with the people that you are selling music to, music supervisors, people who are producers in advertising, whoever they are. I think the key to everything that you do has to be a focus on making sure that those people feel satisfied and feel that you are a real resource for them when they need it. Because there's honestly, if somebody's not looking for a specific song, there's a lot of music out there that could fulfill a need. And if you want to be at the top of the list of people that are called upon when somebody needs something, you really need to make sure that you are managing those relationships by employing best practices in terms of giving them the music that they ask for when they give a brief, or being on point in terms of whatever pricing they're looking at, to either say, yes, I can do that and here's some ideas, or no, that's too low, or we don't really have anything that fits that particular, you know, that particular project. And when you do have something, you're able to react to it quickly and work with them in order to get the deal done.
Yeah, that totally is true. A lesson I learned really early, which it's not exactly applicable to what you're saying, but in a way it is. He told me that a quick no was as good as a yes, and that's really true in the sense that if you have a relationship or try to develop a relationship with a supervisor and you don't have anything that they want or you're not right on it, you're much better off saying, hey, I don't have anything that really meets your needs, and I'm not going to waste your time sending you stuff that might be close. And too many people think, well, I'll take a shot and send this anyway. And that's the quickest way to not get another search with that guy. And the other point, too, is that they're looking for quality, not quantity. And I know there are people that, when they get a search, they send 5, 10, 15, 20 songs to somebody, which is insane, because they're not going to listen to all of them. And so you need to really be right on it, and maybe at the most send 2 or 3 songs to somebody on a search. And personal relationships are really everything, because once you hit with them and get something in a film or a TV show that they're working on or a commercial, they're going to come back to you. And so, but again, you're only as good as your last placement. And if you miss, and if you start taking for granted that relationship and just taking wild shots in the dark, you're going to find out that you're not going to get too many things placed. And so you've got to, and each guy is different, each supervisor, each female or male supervisor is different, and you need to learn how they like to get material, how they like to review material,
yep,
whether they want your input in terms of creative and thinking, well, it fits the brief, and why does it fit the brief, or don't start telling them how great it is. That's another problem that people have. I think this, by saying you the song, and you wouldn't be sending it if you didn't think that it applied to the song. So you don't have to tell them that it applies to the song. Although, and then there are supervisors who will ask you, well, why do you think it applies to this brief, and how do you feel it can be used? And that's a whole different story. So then you get a chance to do some A&R in a way. So, but you got to know who you're dealing with, and that's exactly what you said a second ago. It's all based on relationships, because they're getting all sorts of submissions, and you're certainly not the only one. But you want to be at the top of the list where you know that they're going to review your material, and we've been real fortunate in developing some really solid relationships. And if you get 5 or 10 people that you know are really reviewing your material, you're going to do well over the year, because they're going to use a good amount of your material.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think it comes down to, at the end of the day, striking a balance between giving them what they ask for and doing it in the right way, and not using that as a promotional opportunity, and then knowing how to promote music in a more general sense. Because there's two distinct things here, and I think people mix them up. People say, oh, music supervisor's asking for something. Let me give them what I think is really cool in my catalog, and that's not what the exercise is. The exercise is, but people do that, you know, and it's kind of crazy.
No, you're right.
And the, you know, the thing is, if a music supervisor says, I want A, you give them A. You don't say, hey, listen, I've got C here and it's really cool and maybe it could work. No, you have to really say, this is an objective exercise. They're looking for a tool to use in a particular project, and you need to fill that. Now, with that said, there's other opportunities where you can say to that music supervisor, listen, you can send them a quick note that says, listen, I've got some new stuff you might want to check out when you have some time. This is what it's about. And there's nothing wrong with doing that in a very brief sort of way. And just knowing, you know what, they may look at that email in 3 months.
Correct. And one other point to add to that is, when you send a song and they send you what their budget is, you really, really need to be careful to send them things that can clear. In other words, if it's not a one-stop, if you don't control the publishing and the master yourself, and we control maybe 20-25% of what we submit as a one-stop. So if you're sending, say, Warren Zevon and a Warren Zevon song, and the sync is $2,000 all in, or maybe $4,000 all in, and it's not going to clear because the publishing part, they're never going to say yes to something like that. So what you're doing, all you're doing then is antagonizing the supervisor and the film editor and whatever, if they do want to use it, because they're going to find out that the publishing won't clear, and what you've done is just created a mess for yourself. So you've really got to be careful and know your catalog and what things are going to clear for. But sometimes, if it's a really good cause, for example, taking a Warren Zevon, if something is about a hospital or a hospital sink for a commercial for a sink, you know, for a hospital or something like that.
Right.
Zevon, they're gonna look at that differently than it is if it's a commercial film or a commercial TV show. And then you can, but you need to talk to this publisher first before you submit it and make sure that they will go along with you, because the last thing you want happening is the master clearing, but the publishing not clearing. And so people don't even think about that a lot of times, and you, there's no quicker way to get off that A-list in terms of being one of the first people they look at if they know you're sending them stuff that won't clear. And in the early going, I mean, I made that mistake in a couple of occasions where they wanted to use the song, but publishing was turned down because it was too low, and they were really unhappy about that. And I really was kind of off those people's list for a while because of that kind of a mistake. So you can't make those kind of mistakes. you really have to be right on from the standpoint of, does it fit the scene of what fits the commercial, and does it fit the budget?
Right.
So those are the things you really need to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think that's super important because, you know, if you're coming to a music supervisor, again, the heart of it, the heart of the success that you're going to have is to help the music supervisor solve their problems and not create problems for them. And if you're coming to them with something and you say that you can get it for a certain price and they say, okay, now I'm going to give it to my showrunner or the producer or the brand, depending on what kind of a project it is, and everybody falls in love with it, or everybody decides, even if they don't all fall in love with it, everybody decides, you know what, this is the right song for the project. Then they come back to you and say, okay, let's get the paperwork going. And then you come back and say, okay, well, I'm not so sure about what the publisher is saying now. And then you've put them in a horrible position because
Exactly. And actually, at that point, they've probably been turned down by the publisher from the standpoint of the publisher requesting too much money. And then what you have is a whole different situation where you see requests that go out that are asking for replacements.
Right.
And the reason that they're doing that is because they were turned down by one or the other, by the master side or the publishing side, and they wanted to use something. So, and their supervisors who were actually specialists, I don't know if you would call them replacement specialists, I don't know what the word would be, but they're last minute types that will go after something for a replacement because of the very situation we're talking about. So you've really, really got to be careful in terms of what you submit. And the best way of all is to be in concert with that, with the publisher or publishers prior to making the submission. And if you can submit on the same dollar amount, you're way ahead of the game. And that's what we try to do, is talk to the publisher and see where he's coming from, and then go in together on the price. And that works a million times better, because when you get all of a sudden get a surprise and the publisher, you find out, went in at some ridiculous price, and we've had a couple people do that, that doesn't look real good, and it doesn't look good on you either because you didn't do your homework. You really need to act in an isolated sense. You've got to know who your publisher is and what they're going to do. And some publishers are notoriously high in terms of what they request, and you need to know that they're going to do that.
Right, exactly. And I think that, you know, a lot of this is just common sense and starting the conversation with the publisher or whoever your partners are on the deal side before you engage or present something to the buyer. Because, you know, if you sit down with a publisher of particular work or particular body of works and you say, listen, what are you guys going to accept for a minimum? What are you guys going to accept for a maximum? It gives you an idea as to whether or not, first of all, you should even bring this music out for a particular project. And then, because you've engaged them and you have a relationship, you're able to go to them if there's a special case, let's say. It could be, you know, it could be something for a good works. It could be a charity. Or it could be something where it's strategic for the particular artist. And you say, listen, here's the deal. We might have to take a little bit of a hit on, you know, the price that you expect, but here's the upside for us. And then you at least give them the power to, you know, you give them the power to come back to you and say, okay, you know what, this does make sense, we can move forward on it. But also, and this is really the most important part that I'm getting to, is that if you're doing your job correctly and you have something that you think the music supervisor may really and truly want, well, first of all, you don't go out there with it until you feel that this is something you can close. That's rule number one.
That's very true. And what happens is, if you have a catalog that has A-list songs in it, for example, one of our biggest songs songs, because All I Do Is Win, the DJ Khaled song.
Right, of course.
Used in big commercials and big trailers and major films. And if somebody comes in with a request specifically for that song, or another one might be a Warren Zevon, Keep Me In Your Heart, as an example, which would probably be the two biggest songs in our catalog from the standpoint of syncs, and probably each one would get 15 to 20 a year, I would think, would be about a good estimate.
Right.
And if somebody comes in requesting that song for $2,000 or $3,000, or either one, for $2,000 or $3,000 all in, and you go along with it and say sure and submit it, you're really making a huge mistake, because it's not going to clear, and you're so much better off telling that person, that music supervisor, no, that's not going to clear for that, and you're really wasting your time, and I don't want you to be in that position where you get your film suit, your editor, or your whatever it might be, really interested in using that song, because it's not going to happen. And so if you tell them it's not going to happen, a lot of times they'll say, well, what do you suggest that might sound like it? But don't go ahead and submit it and say good luck with the publishing, because it's not going to happen.
No.
And that happens a lot, where people will do that. And sometimes you can, if you really think it's right for the spot, you can waive MFN. You can actually save a supervisor sometimes,
right,
by waiving MFN and say, okay, look, I think this is really important. And if you're in the position whereby you don't need artist approval and you can make that decision on your own, and you think it's really a worthy usage, and you know the publisher is going in for a higher fee, you can say, hey, I'll knock off $X,000.
Right.
I don't care. You know, keep it confidential, but I'll do that. And you've made a really good friend for life when you do that.
Yeah.
But you got to be selective in that as well, because if you get the reputation of somebody who drops MFN all the time, they'll expect you to do it every time. So you need to use that very selectively.
100%. And I think that that's really the key. I mean, you have to protect your interests, but at the same time, you have to be flexible, because music supervisors are under a lot of different kinds of pressure, you know, in terms of cost, in terms of flexibility and timing to get their job done. And if you, and this is part of your arsenal that you can use to help them to get their job done, and it will help you to get a good reputation with them and to get more syncs. And that's really what it's all about. So let me shift the gears a little bit here, Mick. Why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, tell me a little bit about the music that you guys represent. What kinds of music is it? You know, and what have you found has been the sort of uptake of, let's say, advertising versus entertainment? Is it, you know, where do you find, first of all, like, what types of music do you have? Secondly, where do you find that there's sort of the most interesting projects coming to light from your standpoint?
Sync representation. And so we've gotten better at that and gotten some more usages that way. But the most exciting ones, I think, are the big trailers like Peanuts, Magic Mike, those kinds of films. That's been very, very successful. Major films, major TV shows. The Warren Zevon catalog is a great catalog for us. Peter Cetera's catalog. We have Moby. We have, just trying to think of the major ones. DJ Khaled, as I said.
Right.
So we have a great catalog to draw from. And then again, we also have, which I left out, we have a bunch of distributed labels that we can also draw upon if we don't have it directly. For example, a Shanaki or
right.
Cleopatra. So we draw on their resources. if we're weak in that particular area. So we've done very, very well with Shanicky's repertoire. We've done very, very well with Cleopatra's repertoire. So that adds to what we can pitch. And so there's really not an area we don't have, as I said. The biggest area of weakness would be the singer-songwriter area. And we're trying to compensate for that by bringing in new people that we represent. So it's really exciting, and it's fun to get, it's great to see an ad. It's great to see a trailer that you place that music in. It's always like a new experience. It's like being an artist and driving on the road and hearing your song on the radio. It's great to see that trailer. It's great to see the film or the TV show that has your song in it. It's always cool to do that. And you've got to, a lot of times, you've got to view yourself as hitting singles as opposed to home runs, because they all count. And so I'm just as happy to get a $2,000 sink as I am $100,000. They all count, they're all good usages, and they all can lead to other things. So I don't really view them as important because of the price. So it's just a lot of fun to be able to place it and be right on, actually score with what that supervisor is looking for.
Yeah, I think that that's the thing that people have to see, is that, you know, you have to play a long game here, and not everything's going to be a six-figure deal. When the six-figure deals come along, of course, everybody loves that. But, you know, like you said, the $2,000 deals are really great, too. It's always great to get the music out there and have more music supervisors and more people feeling that you're a go-to person, that you're a go-to company when they need something. And, you know, I mean, there is just a cool factor of hearing the music, of course, in something. But, you know, I think the bigger point here is that they see, okay, this is somebody who's been putting out this music and getting this music into various media, and they're somebody that we should call upon as well. And I think that's really the really important point here.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's very true. And one other aspect, too, is that you need to know your artists and what they want their music in. There are certain artists that don't want their music in an X-rated film or an R-rated film. And that'll actually be specified in some of their contracts.
Right.
Or something that's, or a commercial that has alcohol in it. For example, advertising alcohol. There's an artist, a major artist of ours, who has turned down major beer commercials because he doesn't believe in drinking. You know, he doesn't drink and what have you. So you need to be aware of those things before you play something and say, oh yeah, okay, sure, that's great. And then all of a sudden realize that, no, that's not going to work because he's going to turn it down. And so you've got to, there are a lot of factors you have to balance. It just isn't, sure, go ahead. You've really got to consider all these elements before you do a pitch and before you accept something. And so it makes it a lot of fun, and particularly if you can get involved creatively. For example, one of the things, we have our own a film production company.
Right.
B1 is really, really big in that. And we're starting to, for a long time, we really didn't get the synergy that we really, really wanted. For some reason, we just would seem to not be a first call for the film company or the TV production company like Rookie Blue or other major shows that we have. And now it's getting a lot better.
Right.
We're starting to get to see a lot more usages, and that's really pretty kind of cool. So to see that happen, because people have wanted to develop that synergy, and it should be used. So I'm not saying that they have to use E1 music, and that should be a requirement, but at least we wanted a fair shot.
Right.
And we should be at the top of the list in terms of what they look at, because certainly we're going to give them a better price, and we certainly will discount somewhat given the fact that it's within the same company. So that is getting better. For a long time, really was not that good. For some reason, I think the supervisor had an attitude, well, I don't want to be told I've got to use this company's music because this company is producing or is a distributor of that film. But now I think we're loosening up and we're getting more and more synergy. So that's a really good thing.
That's really good. And it's hard to do because at the end of the day, the creatives don't necessarily want to use music from one place or another. So it really has to be based on the quality of what you can deliver, not just the intercompany relationship. So, I mean, that's some real kudos is deserved on that. I think that's great validation for everything that you guys are doing.
Well, it took a long time, and you had to kind of convince them that you weren't hitting them over the head with a sledgehammer saying, here it is, you got to use it. It took a lot of work to develop that synergy and a lot of sit-downs with the film producers and the directors and post-production people, and it really, really did, but things are getting much better along those lines now. So that's been a major thrust that we had and a major mission because the CEO really wanted that to happen, but now it's starting to happen a lot more frequently.
Well, that's really good. And then there's one more thing that I really wanted to touch upon for a few minutes with you, which is, you know, we've been speaking about best practices, how you work with music supervisors, and the best ways to present music and to make sure that that you build a strong relationship. All of these things are really important. But what I think is really important, people don't talk about as much as they should, is what happens after that sync. Now, how do people take advantage of that? Because I truly believe that sync is really the best way, especially for bands that aren't that well known, to hit a mass market. Radio doesn't really play any artists outside of a very select group that are given to it. And there's social media, of course, and there's the internet, but it's all very diffuse. So when you look at a platform for creating awareness around an act, a band, an artist, I personally believe that sync is really one of the most important ways to do that. Now, from your perspective, what have you seen in terms of artists and the people around them taking advantage of that opportunity? How many have you seen where you think really they actually have? And what do you think that people should do?
Right. First off, financially, I think too many people forget about the backside, which is after a sync runs, no matter who the artist might be, there's certainly going to be a big kick up from the standpoint of download, streaming, what have you. So financially, that always pays off, and people overlook that. They never seem to realize that you're really going to get a kick. And it obviously depends on who the artist is.
Right.
But, for example, going back to Zevon, with a good sync, for example, on Keep Me In Your Heart, he'll do 6,000 syncs, 6,000 downloads at minimum next week, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because it's great. With an unknown artist, there's certainly going to be a kick up, X number of 100 more downloads. And then when you get an artist, for example, Pop Evil, I talked about.
Right.
Pop Evil has really been made by Sync because when they started out, they really weren't getting played on radio. But they did a lot of songs that had sports oriented. So they started being used constantly on ESPN, Fox Sports, Turner, what have you. And what we would always insist on would be a chyron, which would show their name and the record label and the name of the song. And for about a year, year and a half, although they weren't getting played on radio, people were seeing that name Pop Evil. Now, all of a sudden, they wind up being a radio staple. They had 5 number ones last year, and they're in a big, they were in the Dodge Ram truck commercial right now with a Chiron. You had a big dollar sink, of course, and you see that Pop Evil name up there, and they're on major tours. And they're really an example of a band that was made by sinks and not made by radio, because radio was the last one to join the party. They really
right.
were. So there's a good example of a band that was totally made by sinks. Sinks really are, it's a trite expression, but it really is true. In many respects, Sinks are the new A&R, because sales are going down. Radio play, as you said, is really, really limited to X number of people in rotation. So it's a tremendous vehicle for people to get known or to get better known. And the dollar amount isn't as important as the exposure in many cases. So we would take Sinks at a much lower rate. And in fact, initially, we did some gratis stuff, which I'm kind of opposed to in general, but I think it was important because there were major sporting events and those kind of things. And so it did eventually pay off. And for that band, it's been tremendous. They are, as I said, a staple now at rock radio. So that's a good example of what can happen. It doesn't happen with everybody, but it's certainly worth the shot. And so consequently, when you talk about unknown bands, I think, you know, having a gratis play, I think that it's a good thing if, in fact, they're going to get real exposure out of it. Now, if they don't get a Chiron and just plays for a little bit of time and no one really hears it or knows about it, then it's not a good thing. But if they're going to get some real exposure and see their name up there, then it is a good thing. So you've got to really evaluate whether it's worth it or not. And in a lot of cases, they need the advice of somebody other than themselves to decide whether or not they're going to do it or not.
Right. And this is really, really crucial here for people, is that, you know, whether you don't know, maybe tomorrow you will have a big Dodge commercial, or maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have a small local commercial, but it doesn't matter. You still have to employ the same attitudes and best practices in terms of being ready to take advantage of the promotional opportunity of the sink. Because like you said, Mick, no matter what, there's going to be a lift. And whether it's Warren Zevon or whether it's somebody that really isn't that well known, if there's something that's going to bring them out to a few million people or hundreds of millions of people, you need to be ready with your social media. You need to be ready with the tracks. And a lot of indie artists, they'll get a sync and nobody will know where to go to get the music. I've seen this happen, and I know you have too. And
yeah, you're right.
You're kind of blowing what the real long-term play here is if you do that.
Right. Well, yeah, we had one repped artist in particular who was getting a good amount of syncs, about three or four in a very short period, but didn't play the social media game, didn't get out there and really promote the fact that they had that sync, and really kind of just went away. I mean,
yeah.
The artist. So, yeah, you've got to be able to capitalize on it right away. Play that Facebook game, that whole, well, be experts in social media and really use that sync, because there's nothing like it. It's great to be able to use it for promotion. And so you're right. The backs of there are all sorts of other benefits of a sync other than just that fee or that instant exposure, because you can really manipulate it into a career. And a lot of people have done that.
And
I mean, there were singer-songwriters out there who syncs made them.
Yeah.
And everybody knows that. I mean, there are people out there, and that's what created their name for them.
Well, look, I'm going to be speaking to one of those today. He is a guy by the name of Steve Smith, who is going to be on the podcast with us. He had a song from a band called Dirty Vegas, which was made.
Yeah, sure.
They were completely made from that Mitsubishi commercial in 2002.
No,
I mean, you know, and that's one of many examples. But, you know, that's what you can do if you're if you have everything lined up. You can take advantage of it. Okay, so an exit question here, and then we're gonna sign off. If there was one thing that you could tell people that they have to make sure they keep in mind and that they remember when they're going out to the world, whether you know they're going through a rep or they're doing it themselves, that they should keep in mind, what would it be to help them to get the best chances of getting a sync?
Well, the first thing is to remember that there are thousands of people like yourself trying to get the exact same thing. So what makes what you have different? Why is it different? How are you presenting it? Are you presenting it in the best light? Don't be arrogant. The supply exceeds the demand. So, how are you presenting it? Why are you presenting it? And just remember that you can get 100 rejections, and all it takes is one yes, and that can build a career. So, don't sulk if you don't get something for a long time, because you never know when it's going to happen. And it comes out of the blue, in a lot of cases, it comes out of the blue with something that never thought could happen, and all of a sudden a supervisor comes and says, I remember this song you sent me a year ago. So I think you've really got to stick to it and present your music in the best possible light, and don't bug people also. That would be the other thing. If you send something to a supervisor, don't bug him, don't call him up, did you get my this, did you get my that. They don't want to hear from you, really. They're busy as hell trying to get that episode locked, and they don't really want to hear about what you sent them. If you don't hear from them, that means it doesn't get used. It wasn't used. So you don't have to call them up and say, was it used?
Exactly. You'll know if it was used because there will be some paperwork involved.
Exactly.
I mean, you'll know.
They'll be in contact with you, yeah. You don't have to be in contact with them. They'll be in contact with you.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. And on that note, Nick, I want to thank you very much for taking the time out with us today. And if people want to learn more, they can go to entertainment1.com, right?
There you go.
Okay, sounds perfect. Great. Thanks a lot, Mick. I really appreciate it. I'm not using this part now. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. I think that this will probably
fun.
Yeah, and this will definitely work because it's recorded, unlike that